Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're broadcasting to you today live from the Dallas-Fort Worth area here in the studios of Salem, Dallas-Fort Worth, and also SRN Radio. And it's good to be here in Dallas. I was today at the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas, one of the sister schools to the school of which I serve as president. Had a fantastic time there. It's just another reminder of what God is doing in His church with His people, and especially of what's going on in the seminaries, especially evangelical conservative seminaries, in terms of young men responding to be pastors, young men and women responding to be ministers and missionary servants of the church. If you need any encouragement as a Christian believer, let me tell you, you go on one of these campuses, you're going to feel it. Very sweet spirit today. I had the honor of preaching in chapel. I preached from Romans chapter 10 on the ministry of the word, had a fantastic time there, and was treated so wonderfully by the people. Dr. Paige Patterson, the president of that school, who's played such an important role in the conservative resurgence in the Southern Baptist Convention and been so involved in issues like the defense of the inerrancy of Scripture for so long. And it was great to be there with those Christian scholars and students together. And now we're here in Dallas, and I'll be headed back to Louisville momentarily, but this is the place for intelligent Christian conversation on the air on the Albert Mohler Program. Today we're going to be talking about what all of America is talking about, and that's the president's speech last night. And there have been plenty of talking heads doing talking. There are plenty of shows that have been trying to take it apart politically, and politics is an inescapable dimension of this. But my main concern is to offer an opportunity for us to have a conversation about what we wish the president had said, what we regret the president had said, what we're glad the president said. Three issues. What were you pleased with? What really did you hear that led you to believe that's a good point, we need to do that? What did you hear that you would just say, nope, not going there, not going to take that avenue, I can't support that? What did you fail to hear that you really wanted to hear? So this is the place for intelligent Christian conversation, and that means there are a couple of rules here. Number one, our concern is to think about this in terms of what should be the priorities of Christian thinking and what we should be thinking about. And then we're also going to be talking about it in ways that are respectful. That's just very, very important as we're dealing with these issues. I would regret looking back, say, 2-3 weeks out from now and realizing that we did not have the kind of conversation we need to have on the healthcare issue. This is just too big an issue. It's at the intersection of so many cultural, political, moral, economic, societal issues. It's front and center in the American conversation, and thus we need to be there too. We're going to turn to that in just a moment. We'll be hearing a little bit of the president's speech, and then we're going to throw some of these issues out there. I want to hear from you. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. It's time to talk, so give me a call. We're glad to hear from you by email. Just write us at mail@albertmohler.com, Twitter, Albert Mohler, or Mohler Radio, and at Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program. First, a review of some other issues in the news. I have to tell you, this is probably not the most important thing in terms of headline news, but it really caught my attention. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram, an interesting column. It's a syndicated column by Dr. T. Barry Brazelton, well-known pediatrician, figure out there a lot of people would recognize. I saw this because, well, it caught my attention. I think it'll catch yours. Here is a mom writing in about her 4-year-old little boy. Listen to this. She writes, "My 4-year-old son is very active, though he can concentrate for a long time on a task and complete it well. His teachers always tell him to sit. His aunts tell him to stop jumping. We tell him to be careful. We encourage athletics, at which he excels, and we have him work on blocks and art. He rises early and just keeps going. Will he be diagnosed with ADHD? How can I help him to be accepted by teachers so that he isn't always the naughty boy? His pediatrician says he is normal. Teachers say he is too active." You got to love this mom, and you got to love this little boy. Mom, this is a 4-year-old little boy being a little boy. That's the medical diagnosis here. Your pediatrician says he's normal, and this is a case in which I think the pediatrician has it right. And by the way, I think Dr. Brazelton gives pretty good advice just by pointing out that it sounds pretty normal. And by the way, she mentions that this little boy can concentrate and sit for a long time on the stuff that interests him. Here's a little clue for educators and parents worldwide. Sitting at a desk doing boring stuff is boring to a four-year-old little boy. For that matter, to a 8, 9, 10, 14, 15, 20-year-old. That's just the way it works. And so here you have the necessity of teaching boys to respect teachers, to respect the learning environment. But for crying out loud, this is normal. And what we have in this society right now is so much anxiety about boys that boys being boys are considered to be something of an illness or a virus or a contagion you have to worry about in this society. By the way, interesting article at the Washington Times, concurrently with this by Gabriella Boston. This is what she says. She says boys are up to three times more likely to be treated for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder as girls. And the prescription of antipsychotic drugs to children, mostly boys, has gone up by 600% in just the last few years. She is citing psychologist Anthony Rao, who is the author, by the way, of the book, The Way of Boys, Raising Healthy Boys in a Changing and Complex World. Now, this particular psychologist says the problem really isn't the boys. It's our expectations of them. Now, that's just common sense. That's the kind of common sense that should not rate two different news stories or columns in major newspapers in this country in a single day. But it's the kind of common sense that just isn't common enough. And so, yes, there are legitimate issues with some boys, some children. There are legitimate deficit issues in terms of attention that comes partly with being male, but undoubtedly comes with an even greater force with some boys who have some real learning challenges. This is not to deny there is anything to an attention deficit reality with boys and that there's never a need for a kind of intervention. It is to say that something's wrong with a society in which parents are panicking about their boys when basically they're just being boys. Folks, have you seen any of the images coming from the Hubble telescope? I got to tell you, they are amazing. They are simply, well, to use a trite phrase, stellar. I mean, there you are looking at the stars. What an incredible thing to see with the eye. By the way, this is another triumph of engineering technology. The NASA Hubble Space Telescope was unveiled with new deep space photographs taken since its repair mission last spring. A lot about the repair mission, but it takes time for the evidence, the product, the actual photographs to come back. The images are absolutely amazing. By the way, that repair job cost $1 billion. Not exactly like your fridge, you know, going on the disrepair here. What you're looking at is the installation of two cameras and other scientific instruments that basically put Hubble back into action long beyond, by the way, its projected life when it was first put into space so many years ago. Now, here's what really caught my attention. I want you to hear what one NASA senior scientist said. The man's name is Dave LaCrone. He is quoted in the Associated Press coverage. It's in several newspapers today. He says this. Now, listen to this carefully. He says, quote, "What I see is the grandeur of creation, however it got there." It's an incredible statement. Here you have a NASA senior scientist saying, "What I see when I look at those images is the grandeur of creation, however it got there." Well, let me tell you, I don't think he's unconcerned about how it got there. I think the very fact that he had to say it that way indicates that when you look at images like this, when you ponder creation, you've got to say, how in the world did that get there? You know, the psalmist answers that question so directly, the heavens are telling the glory of God. And the reality is, as evidenced even by this man's statement, is that when you look at these images, and frankly, if you just stand out in your front yard and look up at the sky, if you look at God's creation and you are not filled with wonder that leads you to question, how did it get there? I don't even think you're being honest with yourself. This does require an answer. The heavens require an answer. The creation, the cosmos requires an answer. How did it get there? And then, of course, every single particle of it, every atom and molecule of it reflects the glory of God. And that's why you ought to look at these images. Go to NASA's website. You can find them cataloged there. If you've been looking at newspapers or watching what you see in terms of the television news, you're likely to have seen some of them. They are the most amazing pictures. Now, by the way, the word is that the Hubble telescope is soon to turn its cameras to what are described as the farthest reaches of the universe. And this is a direct quote from the Associated Press, quote, "take photos from soon after the Big Bang." Well, we'll see about that. Be very interesting to see what kind of evidence comes back from these photographs. But as for not wondering how it all got there, I'm not buying it. By the way, NASA Administrator Charles Bolden said this, "Our view of the universe and our place within it will never be the same." That is absolutely true. By the way, the first time an American got out of an Earth orbit and was able to take a photograph of that pale blue dot we know and inhabit as planet Earth, right at that very moment, we realized just how small we are within the grandeur of this creation. And yet, as the only creature made in God's image, the only creature able to see this creation and come to a personal knowledge of the Creator, what an incredible thing it is to learn even more and see even more. It makes you ask even more. We're going to come back and talk about the president's speech last night on the Albert Mueller Program. We'll be right back with your calls.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. It was an interesting experience last night. The president walked into the House of Representatives, and the president of the United States delivered an address to a joint session of Congress. That's a very rare thing, other than the State of the Union address offered annually by a president of the United States. This kind of unusually, specially called joint session of Congress, well, it happened only one time in the 8 years of President George W. Bush, and that was immediately in the aftermath of the 2011-2001 attacks. It happened only one time in the administration, 8 years of President Bill Clinton, and that was in 1993, also, interestingly enough, when he was trying to push his agenda for health care reform. And now President Barack Obama has called for this meeting and has indeed now addressed the joint session of Congress. It's history. A lot of expectation about what he might say, what he might not say. Well, we now know what he did say, and our conversation today is about what you think of that. And this is going to be a respectful conversation. I'm going to ask you to talk about the issues that are most important to you. This is not mere politics. I'm particularly interested to hear about the kinds of concerns people would have in terms of moral dimensions to this entire equation, to the whole experience and the whole enterprise of healthcare. The phone number, it's 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-12. And callers on the line, hang with me here. We need to hear just a little bit of the president's speech in order to kind of set the stage for our conversation. Let's hear in particular, guys, clip number two. This is President Barack Obama last night addressing a joint session of Congress.
And that's why under my plan, individuals will be required to carry basic health insurance, just as most states require you to carry auto insurance. Likewise, businesses will be required to either offer their workers health care or chip in to help cover the cost of their workers. There will be a hardship waiver for those individuals who still can't afford coverage, and 95% of all small businesses, because of their size and narrow profit margin, would be exempt from these requirements.
I think you hear something of the president's energy there that was very evident last night as he gave this address. And let's face it, politically, he really has an uphill battle. He's going to have to convince two different wings of his own party to support his own proposals. And the lack of his specificity about those proposals has been a part of the problem. Well, he got rather specific last night, but not quite. And here are a couple of the things he did say. I want you to hear that clip from last night's speech about the mandate for individuals to carry basic health insurance and for most employers to offer health insurance. That is a legitimate issue. I think almost anyone would say that that's a legitimate issue, because one of the problems with any insurance situation when it gets into trouble is there are too many people who need the insurance and too few healthy people who are paying into it. Now, but again, the question is, how do you do that? How do you make it happen? And actually, how do you quantify it? Because in the president's clip you heard there, he spoke of 95% of all small businesses being exempt from even the proposal. And he spoke of a waiver for those for whom insurance is a hardship. Well, you know, by the time you put enough loopholes into a proposal like this, which frankly, politically, you have to do, you have to wonder if it gets you anywhere. And that gets to the who's going to pay for this. And it also gets to the question of coverage. You know, the White House has been talking about 47 million uninsured Americans. Now, the president last night talked about 30 million. What happened to the other 17 million? Well, they were taken off the table because they are illegal or immigrants or undocumented residents of the United States. And politically, well, that posed a problem. There's a lot to talk about here. I want to talk about the issues of end-of-life care. The president went hard at the whole death panel issue. I want to talk about abortion. I want to talk about what you think about the government taking on this kind of responsibility and intervening in the healthcare system. I want to know what you think about this, and I won't know, we won't know, unless you call. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Houston, Texas. Mark's listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Mark. What do you think?
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I want to support this president. I pray for him daily. I would prefer a Thomas Sowell or someone like that over, you know, in terms of ideology. My main concern about President Obama last night was it seemed he continually accused others of lying, but he never gave a specific instance of the specific lie and then gave a specific factual refutation, primarily because I don't believe we really know what his plans are. And that's really my primary concern. I feel like he's polarizing and dividing the country over this issue rather than bringing us together.
I appreciate your call, Mark. I want us to hear one particular quote and clip from the president's speech last night, because, Mark, you're right. The president did accuse many of lying about his proposals. But it's interesting. There's one particular aspect of the whole question he did come at directly about it being a misrepresentation. Folks, let's hear clip four.
Some of people's concerns have grown out of bogus claims spread by those whose only agenda is to kill reform at any cost. The best example is the claim made not just by radio and cable talk show hosts, but by prominent politicians, that we plan to set up panels of bureaucrats with the power to kill off senior citizens. Now, such a charge would be laughable if it weren't so cynical and irresponsible. It is a lie, plain and simple.
Well, that all depends on how you're going to frame this issue. Because I understand what the president's doing here. It's a very strong rhetorical position he's taken. If you are in his position addressing a joint session of Congress with the nation watching by television, it is to your rhetorical advantage to accuse those who oppose you of lying. And if, by the way, in the political sphere, in a Genesis 3 world, you're looking for evidence of misrepresentation to your position, you're going to find plenty of that. In the give and take of politics, unfortunately, you're going to find a lot of misrepresentation. And so if you want evidence of misrepresentation, well, the president's going to be able to say it isn't exactly that. It isn't exactly this. It isn't exactly that. And if you say it is, you're wrong. What the president didn't do, and Mark, here's where I want to amplify your concern. What the president didn't do after he said that is actually admit the complicating factor that is, to me, the biggest issue in terms of the specifics of his proposal. If you're going to address the health care issue, President Obama is exactly right. If you're going to go at cost containment, he is exactly right. You're going to have to address the last 2 years of an individual's life, because that is where a disproportionate amount of health care spending takes place. Now, how you address that? Well, that is the issue. The president himself, in his own words, has said that it cannot be left up to individuals, it cannot be left up to patients and their doctors, it cannot be left up to patients and their doctors and their insurers. At some point, especially given the tax involvement through Medicare, Medicaid, and all the rest, there's going to have to be some kind of independent voice that will have to give some kind of evaluation as to whether a certain patient should have a certain treatment. Now, if you are going at that with the sole issue of saying, will this person be helped by this treatment? Will this life be extended by this treatment? Then, of course, all this talk is unnecessary. But the president is going at cost containment. And if you are going at cost containment, folks, you've got to make a decision. And the president was clear about this when he spoke weeks ago to the press. You've got to be making decisions based upon advisory coming from someone who says this patient's life would not be sufficiently extended to justify this expense. This person's quality of life would not be sufficiently improved to justify this expense. Well, folks, don't call that a death panel, okay? Let's just agree that's the wrong thing to call it, whatever it is. The problem is, Mr. President, there still is an it. And whatever this it is, if it is actually going to contain costs in the end of life, especially for senior citizens, for those of retirement age and above, it's going to have the authority to say no. Otherwise, it's going to be absolutely meaningless. And anything, especially of a governmental or quasi-governmental authority that has the opportunity to say to your doctor, no, you cannot give that person that treatment, that surgery, that operation, that drug, that medication, that technology. Folks, I think America's going to be very concerned about that, whatever you call it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Back with more on the Albert Miller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
You know, you just have to stand back in some awe of the pageant of democracy when you see something like what goes on in a joint session of Congress with the President of the United States addressing the nation. I hope you did what we encourage you to do, and that is watch it as couples, as families. Make sure your children watch, just watch what's going on in terms of the entire Congress and most of the members of the cabinet of the President of the United States gather there to hear the nation's chief executive speak about an issue. And not to speak as a dictator. That's the amazing thing. He wasn't able to get up and say, here's what I have decided, here's what we will do. An American president can't do that. He went to Congress because he has to ask for Congress's help to actually get his proposal from an idea or a kind of a bag of ideas into a proposal that he can eventually sign as legislation. That is the pageant of democracy. And there is so much to be thankful for, just in terms of what we saw last night, in terms of how American democracy works. And what's going on right now is the give and take of politics. Two different parties, not only that, different wings within the same parties. One of President Obama's chief challenges right now is that he has to come up with something that will get a clear majority, an overwhelming majority, the members of his own party in Congress. He's got a much more conservative situation in the Democrats in the Senate than those in the House. And keeping the two wings of his party together, that's probably a greater challenge than achieving some kind of bipartisanship, because actually last night the president mentioned several things that would have strong bipartisan support, chief among them at least beginning some tort reform, some reform in the lawsuits that are also adding hugely, not only directly to legal costs that get channeled into patient bills, but also defensive medicine, where doctors are so afraid of being sued, they will order test after test after test, really running up the bills just to make sure they could say they tried everything. The phone number for this conversation is 877-893-8255. We're going to listen to one other clip from the president's speech. And this is a matter of our ongoing concern. If you've been listening to this program, you know it. You're not going to be surprised by it. But the president made reference to it last night. And I'll tell you the truth. I asked the question, what did you hear that you liked? What did you hear that you didn't like? What did you hear that, what did you not hear that you wanted to hear? Well, this is in my heard but didn't like. And I'll tell you why. Let's listen, guys, to clip number 6.
And one more misunderstanding I want to clear up. Under our plan, no federal dollars will be used to fund abortions, and federal conscience laws will remain in place.
Okay, here's my problem. Number one, do I like those words? Boy, do I like those words. I absolutely like those words. The problem is not what's there, but what's absent. And what we must have in any health care reform legislation that will actually preclude taxpayer monies going to abortion is very clear language that gets to a word that, let me just put it this way. It's a word you don't use very much. It's an economic word, a financial accounting word called fungible. And it works this way. It's not to do with fungus or fungi. It has everything to do with whether you can spend dollars in one column or in another. And the reality is that the current proposal, as best I can understand it, it would say, yes, no taxpayer money is going directly to abortion, but what it would do is pool the money from individuals and the federal government together such that they would just use an accounting trick to say that it's not tax dollars going to fund abortion, when we all know that the abortion wouldn't take place without the tax dollars. And this is the bottom line. For Medicaid, there is exemption language on abortion that works. In terms of federal spending, through the Hyde Amendment, there is an exemption for abortion that works. Unless this bill includes such an exemption, folks, I'll put everything I can behind this. It means that those who are crafting this bill, passing this bill, and signing this bill do not want that exemption in it. And so it's just not enough. Last night, I appreciate what the president said, that no federal dollars be used to fund abortions. It's just not enough. And he knows that's not enough. He knows that doesn't say everything that would actually have to be said to actually make certain that taxpayers are not subsidizing the killing of the unborn. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Ingrid, calling from Orlando, Florida. Go ahead, Ingrid.
Hi, how are you? I have three quick comments. Number one, if we look at the VA hospitals, the Social Security, Disability, and Medicare, I think the government has demonstrated their lack of ability to show that they can run these programs, and I would like to see that run well before we even would consider any kind of government intervention in health care. And also, does the auto insurance comparison that President Obama mentioned really apply here? Because that's a requirement that is to protect other drivers on the road. And could you clarify a comment made yesterday about the fact that someone would be responsible to determine if a person is within their last 2 years of life? How would they do that?
Well, it's not so much determining that you're in the last 2 years of life as in determining that when it gets to aged persons, you have to cut back on the spending, because you don't know the last 2 years till you're at the point of death looking backwards. The point is that any proposal is going to have to make a clear cut of costs for folks in that age bracket. We're going to continue this. We'll come right back, and we will.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Let's go to New Smyrna Beach. Al's on the line. Go ahead, Al.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. My comment is, I wish the president talked about making health insurance portable, like automobile insurance. If we could do that, bring the cost down, and so people could actually afford it, you wouldn't have to keep employers it as a benefit and actually give the employers a chance to actually boost the wages so people could afford it.
Yeah, it's kind of a question of, well, there are three or four different ways, certainly, you could come to very quickly about how to accomplish some of this. Enabling competition across state lines would be a huge advance. I think bipartisan support would be present for creating nonprofit cooperatives. Not government-run, but nonprofit, on their own to try to cover people who cannot afford health insurance. One of the big problems here, though, is just human nature. And it works on both ends, Al, and one Al to another. Let me tell you, it works on both ends. Let me tell you why. There are an awful lot of young, healthy people, and I know some of them, who do not buy health insurance because they make an economic calculation they do not need it. It's not a can't-afford-it situation. It's a, I don't need it. I'm healthy. And so it's very difficult to bring them in without some kind of a mandate. I recognize that, but it's just a question as to whether or not you're willing to take the step to force a mandate. On the other hand, there are those who are very irresponsible, regardless of age, and they would not pay for health insurance, regardless of how inexpensive it was, because they don't pay the other bills as well. I mean, one of the realities is, in this country, there are just a lot of people who will not take any level of personal responsibility. Now, how to address that? Well, that's where government has the temptation to step in. There's the question, of course, as to whether it can step in effectively. The government has a legitimate point. The president has a legitimate point when he says, look at all these people showing up at emergency rooms who should have been showing up for routine care, who should have been going to see their doctors, who should have had physicals, who should have done X, Y, and Z. That's true. But if we're going to be honest, we've got to admit there are an awful lot of those people who, even if they had those resources, would not avail themselves of it. It's hard enough to get people with health insurance, a lot of men in particular, to actually have a physical exam or to have something tested where they know there's a problem. And then it ends up at least potentially being a far greater financial catastrophe, medical catastrophe for everyone. Human nature is an impossible thing to overcome, but when you start to arrange policies, you're trying to at least channel it in right behaviors, and that's where we have a legitimate distinction and controversy between two different sets of proposals here, at least with two different parties at this point. Let's go to Barry calling from Bloomington, Illinois. Go ahead, Barry.
Yeah, how are you doing? Appreciate you letting me on the air. Quick question. First thing, I guess, is I heard you say something about how you're for nonprofit co-ops, and that's fantastic. And I'm for, you know, buying insurance across state lines and tort reform. But the reason I'm for the public option, because I believe health care is supremely about being a patient and not a customer. And I just don't know what the patient or customer, is, if you will, is supposed to do with a existing condition that their insurance company either can't afford to keep them or won't. And what the free market solution is for them when they've been dropped.
Yeah, well, you know, Barry, when you ask, you know, can the free market handle this? I think most of us would say the free market alone probably can't handle this. I mean, that's one of the reasons why as Christians we can never act like the market is the sole answer. For one thing, the church itself needs to be an answer to this, first of all, in terms of helping its own, and also about being a very positive force as Christians are in the society, trying to help those who legitimately, truly cannot avail themselves of health care. And so, you know, just from a justice perspective, the naked market is never enough. And by the way, the market isn't naked. The healthcare is one of the most highly regulated enterprises in America. And Barry, to be honest, that's part of the problem. We actually don't know what a free enterprise solution to this would actually look like because it is so highly regulated. Insurance companies cannot offer the kind of bare bones insurance coverage that a lot of people at least say they want. And there are just so many disincentives to cost savings and all the rest. So I will tell you this. You say you're for a public option. The reason why I am not for a public option is because if you put in a public option, it becomes eventually the only option. That's just the logic of a public option because it can always subsidize itself with tax monies, which the free enterprise world cannot do, which means that eventually it crowds out all the other options. It becomes the only option. And, you know, you may disagree with me on that. I can just tell you that I can't think of an example where that has not been the case. And then it gets to the justice issue, and Barry, I'm just going to be as honest as I can be. In a Genesis 3 world where sin affects everything human beings touch, I would rather have the decision-making in the hands of millions of Americans making their own decisions rather than to centralize it, even in the hands of government personnel, agencies, institutions that would consider themselves benevolent, because I just don't think government does well at being benevolent. And even though it can be well-intended, it ends up feeding itself, and it ends up with policies that I think, you know, quite frankly, often create as many, if not more, problems than they solve. It's not enough, and Barry, your call is very important. It's not enough for people to say, I have health insurance, let everyone else go without. It's not enough to say, it's just a matter of individual responsibility. I was clear to say that covers millions of persons in this situation. It doesn't cover others. It doesn't cover those who are healthy and do not buy health insurance because they do not think they need it. But then, of course, they end up burdening the rest of us and making it far more difficult to offer truly indigent health care. And that's one of the reasons why, as the president spoke last night, one of the issues I wish had been made distinct is the difference between saying people desperately need health care and people saying that they desperately need health insurance, because those are two different things. You may be able to offer genuine assistance for health care without insurance, but you're going to have some mechanism for doing it. And that's where, again, I think people of goodwill, of equal Christian conviction, of equal compassion can come to two different understandings of the best way to do that. And so I just go back to first principles, Barry. I think anytime you use the word public and public option, you've got a big problem. And especially when it comes to who makes decisions. And that's my reluctance. But I really appreciate your call. You make a very good point. And those who think that you can easily dismiss a lot of these issues and just say, trust the market. Well, in a Genesis 3 world, no one can say, just trust anything. That's where we have to recognize that the systemic effects of sin, injustice, inequality, all these things work their way through. The question is, what would actually do more harm and what would do more good? And that's where, from a calculus, very honestly, I have to say by experience and principle, I think the more freedom you give to individuals, the more responsibility you invest in individuals, couples, families, the better off you'll be. The more the answer is government, the more I fear how it will actually turn out. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. I hope we had a good start on our discussion, and this is the kind of discussion that needs to spread as you're in conversation with neighbors, coworkers, fellow students, folks and friends at school and in the neighborhood. This is the kind of thing that should lead to citizen discussion. It's very easy to look to Washington and say that's where the action is, but this is one of those issues that really needs to be a part of our cultural conversation. It needs to be a part of your own responsibility of becoming an informed voter. It needs to be a part of your cultural awareness. And you need also, and I come back to this again and again, to take this opportunity to make sure that your family is educated about what's really at stake here, your children. And so this is a good dining room conversation, good kitchen table conversation. But that, of course, assumes you're having a meal together, which is good for your health good for the health of your family as well. So as many of you are probably even right now getting ready for the evening meal, among the things you talk about, you might talk about the president's speech and say, okay, upon reflection, what are you thinking? What do you really think is the proper role of government? What do you think we should do in order to make the healthcare system include more people? And how do we help people that do not want to take responsibility to take it? How do we help persons to do the right thing? And those are very difficult questions. By the way, as I said, I'm here in Dallas, Texas. I'm very close to the DFW airport here at the headquarters of Salem in Dallas and SRN News. Very close to us here on the horizon is the new stadium for the Dallas Cowboys, and it is an amazing thing. Just being here in Dallas, it's much of the conversation. Of course, the NFL season starts tonight with the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Tennessee Titans, and I'm not a big sports fan, but I do know that's big for this society. It's a big cultural development. America's team, the Cowboys call themselves, are now playing in a room, and you've got to see this, folks, here in Dallas. It is the largest air-conditioned room in the world. It is absolutely huge. The two big steel beams that form the main supports for this domed stadium are each a quarter of a mile long. 100,000 people can sit in this new stadium. It costs $1.2 billion to build. And, well, it's one of those things that just tends to impress with the superlatives out here in Dallas. $40 million video scoreboard, the largest in sports. It's at more than 25,000 square feet. Has 36 million light-emitting diode lights and stretches from the 20-yard line to the 20-yard line along each side of the stadium. When you look at something like this, it's easy to say, you know, that's a whole lot of money, and of course it is. It's an amazing piece of architecture, and yes, it is. But when you look at all this, you look at this expense, just imagine what this says about us in terms of the place of sports in this culture. Not so much a criticism as an observation. When it comes to houses of worship, I think it's at least fair to say if you're spending $1.2 billion on a football stadium, there's something more than a game going on there. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.